is Eddie, and I was in a call.
Planet Earth about to be recycled. Your only chance to survive or evacuate is to leave with us.
Started as an effort by a charismatic preacher to build a new society, but it ended, of course, with the tragic deaths of more than 900 people.
Please, for God's sake, let's get on with it. We've lived as no other people have lived and loved. We've had as much of this world as you're going to get. Let's just be done with it. Let's be done with the agony of it. This is a revolutionary suicide. This is not a self-destructive suicide. So they're paying for this. They brought this upon us.
You're in a cult. I love you, and I want you out of it and with Christ. But you're...
What's up?
Hey, it's so good to finally see you.
Yeah.
So, my name is Dan, by the way.
Okay.
Long story short, I was just talking to him, by the way. I was born and raised in the church, went on a mission, married in the temple, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I'm very familiar with your tract. I've watched your YouTube videos.
Okay.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I have a problem with the church.
Okay.
And so what I'm running into right now is I kind of feel like I'm in a spot where I see the contradictions. This is definitely in my heart. I'm believing that this is really not the one and true church.
Why don't you come over here?
Yeah. Essentially, what I'm at right now that I was speaking to, I didn't even catch his name. It was so busy. But I'm at this place where I see the contradictions in the church. I see the contradictions against the prophets, you know, Brigham Young or the blacks and the priesthood. I'm aware of all of it. I'm having a hard time retaining my Christianity with the same methods. And so, for example, I know that you know the Bible so well. And I run into problems. For example, I know atheists say, which I'm not atheist, by the way, but I know that they love to point at scriptures that look like they contradict each other.
Right.
And I want to know if there are answers towards that. Also, at the same time, I was speaking to whoever's in charge of your social media,
mm-hmm.
and to see, like, hey, when are you guys out here? Because it was really cool that I was having all these issues. I ran into one of your videos, and you guys are local. And
mm-hmm.
so basically the way they said it is I have a lot of Mormon baggage. And so now that I am questioning the church, I'm having a hard time understanding what, you know, the Bible, I believe it says, there's a need for prophets. There's a need for, you know, in Ephesians, prophets, pastors, evangelists for the perfecting of the saints,
yep.
I believe. And so, you know, you're aware of Amos 3:7 and all those kind of things. And so I'm just curious if I'm to believe, which I'm having a hard time, that this is not the true church and that these prophets are not true.
Mm-hmm.
Am I supposed to believe the prophets are needed in this day? And so where I guess my question to you is, I agree with your tract,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what to do from this point.
Okay.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Cultish, Entering the Kingdom of the Cults. My name is Jeremiah Roberts, one of the co-hosts here. With me, as always, is Andrew Super Sleuth Songkrant, the Super Sleuth of the show.
Yep,
how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Today's a very, very special episode, very near and dear to our hearts.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what you just heard in that audio is a conversation that took place. Dan, how long ago did that conversation take place?
I believe that was last year, April.
Because
that was right around the time they were doing the Easter pageant
in
2018, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, yeah, because I was looking at it was April 5th, 2018. For a split second, I thought it was the Christmas lights, but then I remember hearing the background music.
Mm-hmm.
That is the definitive. And it's too bad because they stopped doing the Easter pageants over in Mesa.
Yeah,
so
renovations.
Renovations. We're going to get into why is that happening. There's a whole story behind that, too. So it's obviously pretty amazing. We've talked a lot. If you guys haven't listened to... We've done two episodes with you previously where we were going over the whole history of Joseph Smith's Book of Abraham translation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have you back on because I'm really excited for this series. We are going to be really unraveling and unpacking this book. If you guys are watching this on YouTube, it's called Preach My Gospel. This is basically the handbook of the missionary, of what the lessons the Mormon missionaries go through when they go door to door. So if any of you listening to this program have ever had two people, either a group of men or women, come up and knock on your door, and they want to talk to you about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there's a good chance they've read through this book, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so just real quickly, tell everyone about your experience being on the mission field as a Mormon missionary. You were in Florida, mm-hmm. and you spent time there in, it was the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
So not only did you understand the preach my gospel, but you also realized that you need to try and use the Bible as much as you can to convince the Bible Belt of Mormonism. So you were kind mm-hmm. of like the go-to guy. Just go ahead and just introduce everyone, kind of tell them about what your experience is being a Mormon missionary doing this.
Sure. So typically what happens with members of the church, specifically guys, is you get out of high school and immediately the people surrounding your congregation, in a lovingly way, is, when are you going to go on a mission? When are you going to go on a mission? You know what yeah. I mean? Are you going to go before you get this serious job or before you go to college? And there's just a lot of this cultural pressure that you go. And I'm not going to say it's always negative. Most of it's positive because they want you to go out and do the thing they think is right.
Yeah.
You submit your papers, and a lot of Christians say you play the, I think this is Dr. White, this is, you play the lottery and see where you go.
Wow.
And yeah. So I got called to Jacksonville, Florida, which basically encompasses a lot of Gainesville, Stark, Lake City, Gainesville, Arlington, Jacksonville itself, and just a little tiny blip of Georgia, actually. Mm-hmm. Something that has always been a part of my character is I've always been, I don't want to say infatuated with the Bible, but I've always been very interested in proving the church right.
Mm.
And I felt the easiest way to do that was the common ground that we had with Christians. And something that my parents have even told me in the past is that when we were talking about the Easter pageant, is that it's funny, I may have actually ran into you guys if you were out there during that time, but when I was a youth, probably 14, 15, 16.
It's possible.
Especially when I was going through what's called missionary prep classes, mm-hmm. which is you go to Sunday for 3 hours and the classes are dispersed in whatever area or criteria you fit in. Well, when you start getting the age to be a missionary, mm-hmm. instead of going to Sunday school, you go to temple prep. That's for when you're getting married, but missionary prep classes when you're getting ready to go on a mission. So anyways, gotcha. They teach you all this stuff. Like, you know, when a Christian says, oh, I'm already saved, you take them to this biblical verse. When they say, all I have to do is faith, you take them to James 2.
Right.
And so you start feeling like you're just armed and ready to go. And what I was getting at is my parents, every time we would go to the Easter pageant, which I've done for 27, 28 years. Always happens every year, every time Easter, we see the Christians on the corner. And I would always tell my mom, I want to go talk to them.
Really?
Yeah. And she would say, and it would just be something like, you know, the type of people who stand out on the corner of the streets are pretty much not the people who are ready for the gospel. And so it would always get kind of shunned away. And it's just, they're not the people that want to listen. They're the people just want to tell you what they believe. And so that's just always been my personality, that I've always wanted to just push the gospel out there and prove it right, right? And, you know, when I get called out to the Bible Belt, I ultimately feel like this is where I should be going
mm-hmm.
because that's what I've been always wanting to do.
Yeah, you finally have this opportunity
yeah.
to, before you're seeing them on the street corner.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go talk to them, Mom.
Yeah.
Like, can I go, Mom?
Exactly.
Now you're kind of flown the coop, and now you have the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So real quick. So yeah. just for people who may be ignorant to it, who does the calling? Where does that come from? The person.
So essentially, you're in an. I'm going to try and put this in Christian terms. So everybody is in a ward, which is basically a congregation, and with every single ward, there's a bishop. And when you become the age of 18 or whatever age is designated as a missionary, back in my when I was called to be a missionary, it was 19. It's now recently been pushed to 18. You go to your bishop in a private meeting and you say, hey, I want to apply to go on a mission. And so you go through worthiness interviews. You go through, are you mentally, physically, and every other way capable of doing this?
Spiritually.
It's very strenuous. Yeah.
Do you have to have a temple recommend in order to serve
yes.
a mission? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely required. And so... you go through all this process. There's this massive, massive packet that used to be on paper back when I was doing it. It's now electronic. And you submit this 50-page whatever application of you saying, hey, this is who I am. This is, you know, youth can have callings in the church. And so if you want to say that you were the youth leader of your youth quorum is what they call it, then you would put that on the paper. If you graduated high school seminary honors awards, which is like the youth going to seminary an hour before high school, well, you get an award if you do everything you're supposed to do, like a graduation award.
Right.
And so if you have that, it's like criteria to, you know, show you that you are the right type of person to go on a mission. You write all of that down. And any health, spiritual, whatever the case may be, put all that out, send it out, and then you don't hear anything for a month, maybe 2 months. And the church, which is the first presidency or the Quorum of the 12, will send an email to your bishop saying, hey, we've accepted your papers. We're now looking over them. They will then send him a notification saying his application has been approved. His location is now being discussed. And then there's even there's a video on YouTube, I'm pretty sure. If not, it's on the church website. I'm pretty sure it was Elder Eyring, which is currently a counselor to the prophet of the church. And it goes through the process of what he does to go through all this stuff. And that's a little bit more detail than we'll go into now. But long story short, your bishop will get an email to say your papers have been sent in the mail. You watch your mailbox more than you would if you bought something on eBay.
Right, right.
And you just wait for that sucker to get home. And when it gets home, you like tell all of your family, like, everybody come over to my house at 7 p.m. We're opening our mission papers. You still don't know where you're going. Everybody's circling on the couch like you're about to give this huge announcement. And you open it up, flip a couple of just filler pieces of paper out of the way, and you say, Elder Tate, you've been called to serve by the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints in the area of Jacksonville, Florida, or wherever the heck somebody else goes. That's when you find out where you're going. And so,
and they refer to it as a calling, right? This is your calling?
Yeah.
Okay, because I remember I was in high school, and there's this guy, his name, I can't remember his last name. I remember his name was Tyler, and he was kind of like, he was a senior in high school, and he was kind of the Mormon jock of the school. And I remember they had public announcements, and technically it was a charter school, so it was 98% Mormon, so they kind of had to announce it, sort of like, oh, and a side note, Tyler Black got his calling to London for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They sort of they kind of had to announce it as if, by the way, this is his religion, his particular religion. He got this calling, and of course, the entire high school is like, and I'm just sitting there all by myself. I'm like the 2%
non-Mormon. You're like, I don't know what's going on right now.
So that was just my first experience of seeing anything like that when I was kind of understanding this whole world I've been thrown into.
So
that's like a special, special moment for the person when they're getting there.
So in every ward building, sorry, I just hit the microphone. This bulletin board. So imagine you go down a hallway, the bishop's office is on this side, the clerk's office, maybe a classroom. There's this massive bulletin board that's protected by glass or whatever, so nobody messes with it. But there's the missionary planks or the plaques.
Yeah.
And it's like this like honorary wall of basically where the names, pictures, and areas of missionaries who are currently out from that ward are up on display. And so it's kind of like, oh, that's my son. That's right there. He's out in Jacksonville, Florida. And so it's very much this as a youth, when you go to interviews or when you're walking to church on Sunday, you always come across that bulletin and you're like, wow, you know, I want to be a missionary one day. I want to be up on that wall. You know what I mean? So everybody sees my picture.
Constantly being prepped and groomed.
And so, And so it's just a constant, it's kind of like, I don't want to say the heroes of the ward, but it's really just this very honorable thing to go out on a mission and go serve the Lord for 2 years.
Well, it would be almost similar to like the military families.
That's what I was
thinking. You got a family of Marines.
Absolutely.
And they, and you see the, because I remember there's a while where I wanted to be a Marine and I ended up getting, I had this whole process. I went to MAPS, I got medically disqualified, but I remember seeing just for myself, just seeing the pictures on the wall of this person in uniform having that serious face, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact like, oh, I could have this picture and I would make my parents so proud. But even for, like, for example, from a military family, and you see this whole lineage of my great-great-grandfather fought in World War II, my, you know, my other relative fought in Vietnam, and here's his picture. I want to have my plaque on the wall. That's just what you do.
Yeah.
So there'd be a similar aspect there too, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm curious about too is, well, so another distinction to point out is that when it comes to this whole process of like of the missionary lessons, the difference between the regular men missionaries and sister missionaries, that
elders and sisters,
elders and sisters, yes, they sister missionaries, they're strictly volunteer, so they're not required to go, but but typically they can volunteer, which is in my experience has always been that we'll break go into it the you'd call them like apostate missionaries, and we'll define terms as we go there.
Sure.
And so, because sometimes you'll have Mormons that are just kind of going there because they have to, and I've experienced plenty of that. But most of the time, when you deal with sister missionaries, they're sincere.
Yeah, they're giving it up. They want to.
Because they've made sacrifice voluntarily.
Yeah.
In the same way.
And I don't want to put the wrong message out there. There's definitely no specific commandment that says
right.
If you are a guy, you have to go on a mission, and if you don't, you are sinning. It's pushed in a kind of a, I don't want to say a backdoor way, but it really comes out to say, if you are a priesthood holder, it is your priesthood responsibility to go preach for 2 years. And so there's nothing that really says you can't enter the celestial kingdom if you don't. Like, something that I'm very aware of is President Thomas S. Monson went to the military rather than serving a mission.
Mm.
And so it's definitely not one of those things that's like, you know, you're sinning if you're not, but culturally.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing.
It's like, why didn't you go on a mission? Mm. You know what I mean? And there's a lot of, you know, when you go on a mission, I want to say 50% of them are from Utah.
Right.
And so you run into a whole bunch of, you know, Utah native missionaries, and you hear about the culture of dating. And this is even realistic Arizona, where it's like there are... there's a culture, it's not a commandment, but it's a very strong culture that girls only want to marry return missionaries, honorable full-time return missionaries. And so that is why when your whole religion is centered around, you know, I go to high school, I go on a mission, I get a job, I get married.
Right.
Well, go to the temple, have my kids.
Yeah, right? Well, part of that, when we had our episode recently, Leaving Mormonism, we were talking about just the culture of what it's like for a woman growing up in Mormonism, and how they're taught to believe about eternal marriage and also the importance of being sealed for all time and eternity. Mm-hmm. And even the song that girls are taught a lot of times to sing growing up.
Mormon boy?
Yeah, I know Mormon boy. He is my pride and joy. One day I'll be his wife. We'll have eternal life. You know, the whole thing. And so they're taught that too. So all of a sudden you have, you know, this return mission, the whole idea, it's like so romantic. It's almost like The Notebook, you know. It's like, go ahead and wait for him to return. It's gonna be wonderful.
Oh yeah.
I don't even know if I don't remember this exactly. It may have been the same guy who got elected to go to London at my high school, but it was either him or someone else who went on a mission, and there was whoever his girlfriend was, she was committed to wait for him. For whatever reason, she ended up dating another guy while he was on the mission, and by the time he found out. And literally the day that he returned, within the week that he returned, was the day that she was getting married to someone else.
Oh, yeah.
It's a sad
that
story.
A lot.
It does, really.
A lot.
Because I remember seeing that, and I remember seeing like this couple, if I remember them correctly, and it was like, they were this rock star couple that were like, this is how you date as Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to go on the mission. It's going to be wonderful. And it happened. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the cultural idea. I mean, this is even in, because I was a youth pastor, that's something as you call it a youth advisor, because really like there's the stake president, which is above the bishop. The bishop has his counselors.
Yeah.
And then there's the relief society president, which is over the women. There's the elders quorum president, over the elders. Well, the thing that's very different about the youth is that, so with the boys, there's deacons, which is 12 to 14. There's teachers, which is 14 to 16. And then there's priests, which is 16 to 18. Now, the priest quorum president, the president of the priest quorum, is a youth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the leaders are called the advisors to the youth. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're put into those positions is to kind of give a youth an opportunity to lead and kind of help them. Like, you need to be in charge of this. So what would, you know, anyway, so what I'm getting at is that In the manuals for the youth, it's called strengthening the youth, or is it For the Faith? I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's a specific book that's to help the youth understand how to stay good, how to do the right things. And it's a very specific thing to do not date until you are 16. Mm-hmm. And when you're 16, you don't single date, you double date, which means you don't go out alone with a girl by yourselves. You stay in groups, and that's your courting experience.
Right.
And then you normally don't get serious dating, like I have a girlfriend, until 18. And so there's a lot of this culture, again, that's like you really shouldn't even be dating when you're 18 anyways, because you're just going to go on a mission.
Right.
So you're just going to abandon this girl for 2 years, right? And so there's always those romantics that's just like, oh, I'm going to write you for 2 years, and I'm going to wait. And then... And then you come home and it's like, you know, she's got a ring on her finger and her first kid, and you're just like, holy crap, like, why didn't you tell me anything? And so it is very, very common drama in the mission field that, you know, you have this missionary that's got a pep in his step. We call them the Peter Priesthoods. Like, they're just the guys that are just, I'm here to serve and everything's happy and all this kind of stuff. And then just out of nowhere, his world just collapses. And we're like, what's going on? What happened? And because we have this day called P-Day, which is Preparation Day.
Mm.
Preparation Day is the day that you're allowed to open your mail, open your emails, communicate with your family or friends via email. Still can't phone call. Phone calls are on Mother's Day and Christmas. But that's the day that you update your family, send your blog and email what's going on in the mission, and then maybe go play some sports, get some exercise, go get some shopping done. P-Day is the only day you're allowed to do that.
Wow.
So when somebody gets devastated on P-Day,
ooh,
Preparation Day, you kind of know his girlfriend most likely dumped him.
Mm. Oh,
and
man,
so
that's rough.
It's very common that there's these, you know, I've been dating this girl for this many years and we're going to get married, and I write her every day, and you know, your study desk has a certain space, and there's pictures of him and this girl all over the place, and then all of a sudden it's not there anymore. Yeah. And so, anyways.
So it's kind of funny. I mean, it's funny hearing it from you, because obviously you experienced it on the inside, and this was your life for 27 years. And for me, I was thrown into this in high school that, I mean, I was just a sheltered, homeschooled kid, and I got thrown into this. They wanted me to go to school because they just, with my mom's health, she couldn't really homeschool us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, like, I went, and they were, well, you can't go to public school. We want you to go to this charter school. And because at least there's some level of, like, it's not going to be overly worldly or something like that. And then so... the school I just happened to pick was 90% Mormon. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I got kind of just involuntarily thrown into this world. And it's just funny because so many things you're saying, I could totally relate to, especially when it comes to the high school dances. And like, there were people like that who are like, should I date her? Cause I'm probably gonna go on this mission and stuff too. Yep. But it's good to show, I mean, we're kind of joking and have a fun time here, but I think it's good to show too, that when we're talking about the missionary lessons and this manual that they go through. And it's good to know too, that you're dealing with real human beings who have been through, who they have their own culture. This is where they grow up. There's most of the time sincere, or sometimes they're having to do it, but they're wanting to follow what they believe is the truth to the best of their ability.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we make the mistake sometimes of just seeing someone like that. Oh, we just want to go and like tear them apart without almost divorce, and I've done it too, where you totally divorce someone from the human factor, the fact that they're human.
Made in the image of God.
Yeah, and you just all of a sudden just want to take out your Bible and be like, rah!
Might take your anger out from Brigham Young onto the member who may not know anything about it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, what we're going to do is we're going to go through Preach My Gospel, which is the manual for the Mormon missionary lessons. So, we're going to be kind of going through, there's six lessons. Mm-hmm. And
I think there's five. Is there six?
Is there six?
If I'm wrong, that's going to be really funny.
I
know you almost have that thing like memorized.
For 2 years.
Okay. Yeah.
there's five lessons.
Yeah, five lessons. Five. Okay. Okay. We're going to be kind of setting a foundation of really how it's viewed from, because there's a section that's written out to the missionaries.
Yeah.
So if you look at, there's a section where there's the First Presidency message, which we'll go over. But there's basically three parts, which is, what is my purpose as a missionary? How do I study effectively and prepare to teach? And what do I study and teach? So we're going to be kind of going over that and setting a foundation. So I've already skimmed over this book, and before we kind of jump into it, we got to share the story real quick.
Tell it, just so funny.
We have to tell the story here.
Okay, I got to tell it to a certain part, and then okay. You got to cut in when you actually
yes.
walked in.
Okay.
This is too
you're
good.
Gonna be able to tell that better.
It's great.
So, obviously, it doesn't matter what religion you're in. If you're a kid, there's always places where you get into trouble. And so when you're a youth, you become a teenager, that is the point in which you are able to go into the temple to do baptisms for the dead. And so it's really special experience. It's the first time you're able to actually go inside, because normally you can't go inside unless you're getting your endowment or getting married.
Right.
And so anyways, us being the kids that we are, we still play pranks and do things to each other in the temple or anywhere else. And so let's say you're a youth that's 16, 17 years old, and you've been going into the temple for years, and then you get this very first fresh deacon who's 12 years old. And he comes in, it's his first time coming into the temple, and usually what you do is you go to a front desk and say, here's my temple recommend, this is who I am. Yes, thank you for coming into the house of the Lord. Go sit mm-hmm. down over here. And so you go do the baptisms for the deceased. You come back in, and then you wait for everybody else to get done. So there's yeah. just a waiting place that's very similar to a very small chapel with pews, and there's an organ that's playing automatic hymns.
It's quite intimidating.
Yeah. And so we're all just sitting there quietly. And so, you know, you have this 12-year-old that's just like, oh my gosh, this is the temple. It's so beautiful and all this kind of stuff. And you might hit him in the shoulder and say, hey, you know, if you go over to that desk and you tell them that the password is Liahona, that they will give you a really special picture for this being your first time. And they're like, oh my gosh, are you serious? And so, like, there's millions of times we've done stuff like that where this little 12-year-old will just come up to this elderly lady that's probably 60 years old. And he'll just come up there with a very straight face and just say, the password is Liahona. and she'll look at him like, what is wrong with you? And you just got six yep. boys in the pews just snorting with laughter. And that's when we get, you know, thwopped on the back of the head. So anyways, how this relates to what in the world Jeremiah and I have been going through, or what I put him through, is that we were discussing going through the missionary handbook. And the Preach My Gospel is literally the book that the missionaries will use to teach people from.
Right.
And so, you know, the missionary prep classes inside of your wards when you're still in your home city, or when you go to the missionary training center in Utah for, I think, 3 weeks or 4 weeks, depending on where you're going. And then you go out there, you're just constantly studying this book because it's where all the lessons are at. So Jerry's like, hey, I want to copy this book. I want to go over this because sometimes I might see things because I'm outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I kind of set this thing up. He's like, Dan, can you grab me a copy? And I'm like, oh, I don't really know that I'm going to be on that side of the town, because I know that there's two Deseret Books. I used to work at Deseret Book before my mission, and I very well know that I drive to a parking lot that where our bank is for what I work for, and I'm next to Deseret Book every day of my life. But I want to tell him to go to the one in Mesa. And so I tell him, I'm not going to be able to make it, but just go over there and pick something up. It's going to be right on your way of meeting with us. I tell him just to walk inside. You want to get a pocket-sized Preach My Gospel. It's going to be super cheap, like $5. And he's like, okay, sweet. Sounds good. I let that marinate for a little bit. And I'm like, you know, Jeremiah, I used to work there. And there's also something that's a little bit secret with the members of the church, that if you go to the front desk and you just say, the password is Liahona, you'll get a membership discount, or they might just hand it to you. And, you know, who's going to pass up a discount?
Yeah.
And so I can't remember your exact message that you said, but you're like, sounds like a pretty sensitive
code
or organization. Like, it seems pretty yeah. tight knit. And I was like, so when you go to the, because he,
well, you said, you said, FYI, Liahona is an artifact compass God gave Nephi in the Book of Mormon that guided him to the Americas when leaving Jerusalem on a boat.
You went all out.
The Liahona yeah. only worked when they were faithful, in case you didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
And then you spelled it out. You're like, Lee, space. You
sounded
A,
it out.
Yeah.
Hone.
Yeah, I was like, you have to say it like right. You don't want to go in there and say, like, Liahona or something like that, or whatever the case may be. And so I was like, when you go inside, because yeah. you were in the parking lot at that time, you yep. didn't walk in. I was like, don't go in and say, I've heard if the password's Liahona, and I could pause, because I was like, if you say that, they're going to know you're not a member.
No, this is like, so, we're saying this is like Captain America. If you guys have seen Captain America Civil War, this is where you go up and you whisper, Hail Hydra. So I'll jump in. And so yeah. I just said, all right. And part of me in the back of my head, I'm sensing possible, I just feel like this is just off. I'm gonna roll with it because this is gonna be funny later. It's gonna be a funny story.
Yeah.
So I'm like walking in there. I feel almost like this. I'm up to something sinister. So I'm inside the Deseret bookstore, and sure enough, I grab Preach My Gospel, which we're gonna go over, and I go up to the register, and I just stop. I look up to him after I pay for it, and I go, Liahona. I say it with a totally straight face, and the guy like he pauses, he looks over at I think he
probably
kind of
looks, the manager
he looks over at the manager and he says someone just called and they paid for the book.
That's so good.
And I go, oh, praise the Lord. I grabbed it and I just like walked out. And then after we got dinner and we were talking about it, then afterwards you're like, I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because you came out and I'm pretty sure you had a strong suspicion of like, Dan, you probably called and just paid for it. And yeah. I was like, oh, he probably just said somebody called in and paid for it because he's probably just trying to play it safe.
Right.
Like, was there somebody behind you when you said the password? Like, was there anybody around? And I was like, he probably just didn't want to give it away. And so I didn't say it till like,
yeah, it reminds me of
later.
This old job. One of my old jobs, someone pranked me one time. They said, like, you have your employee ID number. In order to get the printer to work, you have to, it's audio activated by your employee number. So you have to speak, you have to get up really close to the printer and say, and I was like, 20441. And the whole office started roaring.
That's so good.
So, needs to say, I have a show that I co-host on Colts, and I'm gullible. So, imagine that. So, anyway, so let's just jump in though. Let's get into the meat and potatoes here with Preach My Gospel. And so, what I'm going to do is that Dan and Andrew, you can jump in anytime that you want to here as well. And you've done a little research on what we're going to jump into as far as the numbers and stuff, but. There's a little bit, and I was talking to you about this, I feel with everything you were telling me, especially with your experience, and I think it's also important to let people know, too, that a lot of times people assume someone goes through something, and they just want to tell everyone, like, how bad it was, because, like, they're bitter, and they just want to kind of, like, you know, but that's, I've talked with you plenty enough, that's not your heart, that's not where you're coming from, and that's not the case at all, but it's important to talk about, there's, in a sense, this... How would I say this? This dualism, or almost like duality, in regards to the whole how the missionary between the machine of Mormonism and why, and also just the missionaries who are sincere, trying to do what they think is God's work, but basically the whole infrastructure of why the missionaries do what they do in regards to getting converts, getting them baptized. Mm-hmm. And what happens from, you would even say, like a financial perspective.
Mm. Yeah.
And we're going to unpack that. But there's two different sort of worlds we're going to approach as we unpack this.
So like there's an organization, and then there's the individual who is influenced by the organization.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm going to go ahead and just introduce this. So the first part, it's kind of like the introductory aspect of Preach My Gospel. This is the first presidency message, and so I'm just going to go ahead and read it, and then Dan, if you want to give any comments on it, and then as we jump in, we'll go from there.
Sure.
So this is written out to him, so if someone's a missionary, this is the first thing they're going to read as they open this up. It says, "Dear fellow missionary, we congratulate you on the great opportunity to be a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There is no more compelling work than this, nor any which brings greater satisfaction. Preach My Gospel is intended to help you be a better prepared, more spiritually mature missionary, and a more persuasive teacher. We urge you to use it daily in your personal and companion preparation, and in your district council and zone conferences. Study the reference scriptures and learn the doctrine and principles. We invite you to rise to a new sense of commitment to assist your Father in heaven in his glorious work. Every missionary has an important role for helping, quote, bring to pass the immortality and the eternal life of man." Moses 139. "The Lord will reward and richly bless you as you humbly and prayerfully serve him. More happiness awaits you as you have ever experienced as you labor among your children." The first presidency. So when you were seeing this, I mean, this is sort of the excitement. I mean, you're going out there to go on your mission. Like at the time when you see kind of the first presidency telling you, kind of commissioning you in this sense, is there like a level of excitement being almost being caught up in something bigger than yourself, or being part of that, or what was that like when you kind of
there's this concept in missionary culture called Whose Name Are You Serving on the Badge? And what that means is that every missionary has a badge on over their heart, which is that I'm Elder Tate of Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so there's this concept that's talked about that says, who are you serving today? Are you serving Elder Tate or are you serving Jesus Christ?
Hmm.
And so there's this idea that you are literally an ambassador for God. Hmm. And you are being sent. And the scripture that they use, Moses 1:39, it basically said what this verse says in its entirety. I don't know the exact verbiage, but when it says to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man, it says this is God's glory to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man. So what that verse is trying to say is that you are assisting in God's glory.
Mm.
God's glory, his whole purpose is to bring his children to the celestial kingdom.
Right.
And how great of cause that he is allowing you to assist in that process. So imagine you just got out of high school. You think you're doing this big, bold thing. I'm now an adult. I'm not going to live at my parents' house anymore. I'm going to serve a mission. Bam, I'm Elder Tate. I've got Jesus Christ's name on my heart. Yeah. I'm ready to go. You know what I mean? So it's very empowering.
It's like
the best way to
it's like
it.
Leaving your physical parents' house to go serve your eternal father, your
Absolutely.
Spiritual father's house.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. To become more like him, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, when you get paired up with missionaries together, is there one, would they're kind of like in the same way if you're going through the police academy and you write, like, once you graduate, you typically will go along with someone else who's like a more experienced cop, you know, in the squad car or however
sure.
they pair up. Is there an aspect of pairing up where there's someone who's already been on the mission field, like maybe 6 months, you kind of have the leader and you're kind of the new guy? Or is it just...
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just two brand new guys who've just... You're being thrown out there.
Kind of. I'll tell you something really fast.
Or is it a little bit of both?
It's definitely both.
Okay.
So a lot of times what you'll really see is that if you have a missionary that's just very chill, down to earth, like, hey, my name's Elder Tate. I'm with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah.
And then you see the missionary that's like, hi, I'm Elder So, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
usually the guys that are very, you know, enthusiastic, overly enthusiastic are the ones that are brand new.
Mm.
And not to say that they get negative later on, but what I'm getting at is that there's definitely this aspect of, so there's different callings within being a missionary.
Okay.
You can be just a regular missionary. Now, within these two missionaries that you always see, there is what this just told you is that something about companionships.
Mm-hmm.
What a companionship is what they call two missionaries serving. And so you have a senior companion and you have a junior companion. The senior companion is always the companion that has been serving longer. Now, when a new missionary, we call them greenies, when the greenie missionaries come out from the MTC, which is the Utah Training Center, you go there. So from home, you fly to Utah.
Yeah.
You're there for 3 weeks to get like solid missionary training, and then you zoom straight out to your area, Jacksonville, Florida. And so when you go to Jacksonville, Florida, that's when you have what's called your trainer. Now, trainers are missionaries who are experienced and also have shown an ability to teach other missionaries.
Mm. Yeah.
And so it's a little bit of a higher calling for this other 21-year-old missionary. We're all just 19, 21-year-olds.
Right.
And so... But yes, there's a trainer, there's a greenie, and so there's typically the, I've been out here for a year, I've been out here for 3 months.
Mm.
There's typically that.
Yeah.
Now, for me, what your time is constructed as is you have timelines called a transfer.
Mm.
A transfer is every 6 weeks. And so every 6 weeks, you get a call, hey, Elder Tate, you're staying in your area for another transfer. Hey, Elder so-and-so, we're transferring you to another area. Show up at the transfer meeting at 8 a.m.
Gotcha.
And so every 6 weeks, you're told, are you staying or are you moving somewhere else? So my first 6 weeks, obviously, was my training period. I mm-hmm. had my trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my next 6 weeks, I was kicked out of that location into what they call whitewashing. Now, what whitewashing means is that usually what happens within a transfer is that one missionary stays and the other one goes. So let's say I'm a greenie. I come to Gainesville, Florida. Well, the guy who was there was probably the senior missionary.
Right.
And I stay here for maybe two transfers, which is 3 months.
Mm.
And then he gets transferred, and I now become the senior missionary of Gainesville because I've been here longer and then also longer than this guy.
Mm.
Well, what whitewashing is when both missionaries leave and two brand new missionaries come in. When that happens, you don't have a missionary that's like, oh, we meet with this person every Tuesday. This is where the bishop lives. These are the people we always meet with on Wednesdays that we go over for dinner. Like, you have no context of the area. And so I was whitewashed into an area in my second transfer. So I haven't even been out for 2 months yet.
Right.
And I'm now training another missionary. So I'm training somebody when I've only been out for a month and a half. And on top of that, my prior area that I was being trained in had a car, and my new area that I'm being whitewashed in did not have a car.
Right.
So I had to go get a bike. We didn't have a Garmin. We had flip phones at the time. Like, iPhones were not out. I feel so old saying that. Oh my gosh. But
we had the the Verizon, those Razer phones? Razor.
That was around that time. Yeah, but that wasn't the one that we had.
I remember when I got the Razer phone. It was so thin, and it was like,
oh yeah, dude. Like, everybody in high school was a cool kid when you had those
phones. Oh yeah.
The T-Mobile Sidekick?
Yeah. Anyways, like, so I'm thrown into this area. All I have is a map, like a map you'd get at a gas station.
Right.
I have no car. I don't have a bike yet. I don't know how to find a bike place because I don't have a computer. Mm-hmm. You can only use a computer at the public library on Mondays.
Wow.
So how am I supposed to find where to go, what to do, where to purchase a bike, any of that kind of, so you know what I mean? So there are occasions where missionaries are just completely thrown in the dark.
Mm.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's good. And that, the reason I was also wondering that too, because in the introductory for the missionaries is a part where it talks about additional companion study.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably familiar with this. It says companion study is extended every day, approximately 30 to 60 minutes along your first 12 weeks in the field.
Yes.
So basically, like, as you're going through, you're learning additional things about how to do the missionary lessons. So, I mean, you do like pre-train. It sounds like you're doing obviously training beforehand, but there's a kind of additional training you do once you're kind of on the field. I mean, you're obviously spending time going door to door, but you have time where you're going through learning more about the lessons, doing a whole lot more study.
Yeah. I thought
of this too. Explain what, in regards to all this, like, what does a typical day look like in the mission as a missionary? Maybe that was that what you were going
exactly
to?
Okay,
yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, yeah. So every single missionary, they have, if you see their badge, typically there is a white handbook inside that shirt pocket. That's called the missionary handbook. We nicknamed it the White Bible.
Okay.
Because it's a white handbook, and it basically is the Bible of how to be a missionary.
Always have
it.
Here
are the rules that you're supposed to do. Here's the things you're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on secondary to that, every single missionary has a missionary handbook, which is basically a planner.
Mm-hmm.
It was usually about the size of a cell phone. I wonder if they even have those just on their cell phones now, and they don't even use paper and pen anymore. That'd be phenomenal.
Right.
But anyways, the white handbook specifically states that a missionary is supposed to wake up at 6:30 a.m. in the morning, and they go to bed at 10:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Now, between the hours of 6:30 and I believe it's 8:30, that is the time that you're supposed to get your morning exercise in, your morning prayer, morning shower, get dressed, get ready to go. And then at 8:30, I think it's 8:30, maybe 7:30. Anyways, once you get exercise, breakfast, meal, dressed, ready to go, showered, you have an hour of personal study. Now, personal study can be anything. You can study the Bible. You can study the Book of Mormon. You can study church-approved books like Jesus the Christ, stuff like that. Or you could study Preach My Gospel if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But after that hour of personal study in the morning that happens every day, you then have an hour of companionship study where you specifically go over Preach My Gospel. So every day for an hour, you're reading out of this book. And it doesn't matter if you're almost about to leave and you're about 2 years out or if you're brand new. You're constantly reading this book for an hour a day. And you're going over the lessons. You're discussing. And more importantly, you may be going over the lessons. Say, hey, we have Jeremiah that's interested in the church. And this is one of the questions that he has. And he's stuck in this area of the lesson. So we're going to re-go over this and then maybe talk about how we can get him through this concern that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're always in this book because this is the book that you teach from when you sit down with somebody.
It's literally like 2 years of spiritual boot camp.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And so from, I believe it's either 10 o'clock or 10:30, from all the way till 8 p.m., you are not supposed to be in your apartment. You are supposed to be out on the streets, trying to stay out there as much as possible, because the more time you spend on the streets, the more effective you are.
Yeah.
So knocking doors, meeting with people in their houses, visiting with members and asking them if they have friends, constantly. Like mm-hmm. if you spend too much time in the apartment, you're considered apostate,
yeah.
which means lazy. And so, you know, if you, and this is a thing that's, might be going a little bit too far. Maybe we'll get into that later, but essentially you go out and you proselytize.
Is that proselytize? Right?
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Potato, potato.
Until about 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
If you don't have an appointment at 8 o'clock, you are to go home. If you do have an appointment, you're allowed to stay out till 9 and you have to come home immediately after that.
Okay.
You get home at 9, you have what's called planning, which is planning the next day out. You're saying, okay, this time from this time we're studying, right at 10 o'clock we're going over to this person's house, right at this certain time we don't have any meetings, so we're going to go track the knock on doors. At 3 o'clock we're meeting with the Johnsons. We have a plan B. If the Johnsons don't answer the door, we're going to door knock their entire street and see if we can find more people. You always have a plan A. You always have a plan B. Mm-hmm. And you are basically busy from when you walk out the door to when you get back. So that's your planning session. After planning's done, you make your PB&J or your 8:30 p.m. bowl cereal. Get in the shower, wash off all the sweat, go to bed. You have to be in bed, lights out, 10:30, wash and repeat for 2 years.
Whew. Wow.
So it's tough stuff. Like mm-hmm. there are, I even still have them, my missionary shoes. It's like this thing that missionaries are very proud of, is to show that their shoes have holes in them, because it shows that you actually served, that you actually hit the streets, that you weren't just a missionary that stayed in the apartment for too long. I still have my shoes that have this gaping hole right by one of my toes.
You should when we drop premiere these episodes, you need to bring those in, or just send me a photo of them.
Oh, so yeah, sure. Like, yeah.
We could do a trending hashtag Dan
yeah.
shoes.
Yeah. And people would be like all the time, like, okay, why don't you just go get shoes? I'll give you $10. Just go okay. to Ross. And I'd be like, no way. And so
let me ask you this, because have you seen those? We'll have a little fun here. They always have the thing like people from Florida. You know, there's a whole, all those running jokes about like all the crazy stuff that happens.
Florida man.
Florida man.
Yeah. Well, you know,
yeah.
There's all those stories. I forget like the trending hashtag, but there's always these interesting stories of things. It's like Florida headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, I forget what you, like, you just type in like April Florida headlines and stuff. There's always this weird, interesting stuff.
Oh yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but you probably mean knocking for two on doors for 2 years. There's gotta be like a great classic story that you,
oh, man.
You share stories with each other. But if there's like one of the most unique, interesting people that you spoke with, or you knocked on a door, like what would you pick if you could think of one off the top of your head?
Jeez, dude. I've had guns pulled on me.
What?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Two times. Two different occasions. I've had...
Just because you knocked on the door?
This is one of those Walmart stories. It was during one of those times, if you want me to go over that. But probably the most charismatic, no pun intended, situations that we had is when I was... So I had my six-week training period out in the field when I was being trained. And then I got whitewashed into Arlington. That's where I was. And I had my greenie missionary. So I'm pretty much just a month and a half out. That's how long I've been on my mission. He's day one, literally day one. Well, we're like, well, this apartment's empty. We have no food. We don't have a car. We don't have bikes yet, because we didn't know we needed to get bikes at this point. We don't have Garmins. We don't have cell phones. There's a Walgreens across the street. We have to get food, because we don't even know where a Walmart is.
Yeah.
And so we go across the street, we go to Walmart, and or Walgreens, and we're picking up milk, cereal, easy stuff like bread, peanut butter and jelly, like anything that you think an 18-year-old guy would know how to cook or even make. And we have this guy that comes up to us, it's very charismatic, older guy, and he's like, oh, the Mormons, you know, we have a church over here, all this kind of stuff. And like out of nowhere, I've never seen this in Arizona, out of nowhere, hands straight up to the Lord. And just starts speaking in tongues like the whole freaking place can hear it.
Oh, wow.
And what? I'm sitting here like deer in the headlights. And my greenie missionary, like, this is his first day experience.
First day in line, and some
first
guy
day
has
in
hands
line,
up and is saying,
hands up to the Lord.
Saying, just, Shabba Shabba, who
oh,
knows what.
Oh, yeah. And we're just completely like, wow, yeah. Yeah, that was... and you know, he's like, oh, you know, the Lord just took me over, and just, you know, praise God and all this kind of stuff. And we're just like, Yeah, we've got to get back to the apartment. So we're gonna jump out of here. And we literally just like sat in the apartment for an hour. Like, what did we just get into?
Yeah,
and it was so obscure. Like, you know what I mean? It's the Mormon bubble that you're into. You don't know anything about this. And definitely an experience to put some hair on your chest.
Because yeah.
There's so many things that
yeah, just
hit you like that.
So what I was saying earlier, I remember. So if you type in like any, like type in like Florida man, and then type in your birthday, and mm-hmm. you'll pull up some crazy headline.
Yeah.
So my birthday is April 17th. It's coming around the corner. I'll be older. Or don't want to think about the age I'm going to be. But
yeah.
So I typed in April 17th, Florida man, April 17th. And the headline says pajama wearing Florida man reportedly wanted to flirt with Waffle House waitress, pulls a knife out.
That's wild.
So you do that.
I believe it.
There's a bunch of things you could type.
I believe it.
You could do Florida something, and then the stuff will just pop up. It's kind of mm-hmm. hilarious. But yeah, man. So what we're going to do is that we want to just lay a foundation. We'll probably go more into details of what we were talking about earlier, like your experience as things progress, because this will be like your story is very similar to what a lot of not only more missionaries have dealt with many a times, but even people like in cultish movements where they believe they're part of something bigger than themselves. They believe they're following the will of God. But all of a sudden there ends up being this conflict of interest where you start seeing the machine versus mm-hmm. what you thought was this everything that was the movement of God. So there, like I said, there's a level of, you know, we're being lighthearted here, that there's a level where these people are real, and like even like the story you're doing, you probably were joking with your buddy afterwards and you still think you're doing the Lord's work.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously like you're sincere. But at the end of the day, when it comes to the Mormon religion, there's an aspect, what is the result of going out and doing the proselytizing?
It's yeah.
When someone gets baptized, they go into the church, and the reality is a big part of the LDS church is tithing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 10% across the board. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so when that happens, there's obviously a return on investment for you guys going out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the reality. So that even like with you being sincere, that's the reality, is that people there's a return on the investment.
Right.
When mm-hmm. it comes to going from door to door, even with all the rejections and sometimes people sticking their hands up and praying in tongues and who knows what else. So super sleuth. I had to use some last minute super sleuthing
yeah.
when it comes to
yeah, yeah.
some statistics and stuff like that. So real quickly, I'm going to kind of hand the mic to you or your mic to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Give
yeah.
us some details here, man.
All right, bro. So, yeah, I was doing some quick research. Jerry wanted me to take a look at the numbers just to see, you know, how many missionaries typically are there out. And also just, you know, money in regards to tithing and things of those nature. Before I go into that, though, I just want to say, talking about spiritual boot camp, it sounds like there's two things that can happen to an individual in that situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that type of rigid structure, if we're going to look at the military, it's either going to make you or break you.
100%.
Right? So there's yeah. a reason why the military does what they do, is to replace a civilian identity with an American identity, you know what I mean? To go out and fight for your country.
Yep.
And we've got to think that the Mormons are doing, or the organization is essentially doing the same thing to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to separate the wheat from the tares.
Absolutely.
You know, to create a full devout member to their organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really interesting, because like we said, there's the organization, there's the individual, and there's a point to where we got to remember that the people that are going out and going door to door are essentially victims to an organization that's preaching a false Christ and a false gospel that can't save. You know, there's people that are really hurt from that. Mm-hmm. And so just to go into a few of the numbers, we would see that this is actually from churchofjesuschrist.org / facts and statistics. It says in 2016, there were 65,137 missionaries, and that was worldwide. So these are worldwide statistics. There's 11 training centers, and let's see here. That's a lot of missionaries, if you think about
yeah.
it. 65,000 going all over the world. And then what we want to think about in regards to tithing, you know, the Mormon church doesn't really release their financial records. I think when I was looking it up, the last time it was ever released, I believe it was either 1959 or 1949. So I went into a Pew Research, so from the pewforum.org, from a 2009 study where I was just trying to look at the average income, you know, of an LDS tithe payer. Mm-hmm. And one says 38% of Mormons report earning between $50,000 to $100,000 annually, and they are more likely to earn more than six figures than the average, you know, type of person in America. So if you were to break down the numbers, there's quite a bit of money in the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. You know, that's part of it. That's how they keep it running. That's how they keep the organization running. But one other interesting fact, though, that I found in this Pew form is it says that converts are more likely than lifelong members to come from So it says that converts are also less likely than lifelong members to be married, right? At the rates at which they have children living at home are closer to the national average, the Mormon average. So there's a situation where I find that it's good to go out and get baptisms, right? And Daniel, you're probably going to speak to this so much. Mm-hmm. But there's also the aspect of creating a person to have a family, to have children. Mm-hmm. Can you speak about that?
Yeah. So the thing that's actually very interesting to me is that, like I was saying before, there's very much this culture of I want to marry a returned missionary, right? It's interesting that you say that the number of converts that get married are significant. I don't know if it was significantly less, but definitely more less than members.
Right.
So that might say, what if this convert came to the church when they were 20 years old and didn't get an opportunity to serve mission?
Mm.
They might think that, you know, maybe girls look at this guy and say, oh, he's just an infant in the gospel. What if he's a project? He doesn't have his endowment yet. You know what I mean? But anyways, there's definitely an aspect that has to come into raising people, and everything is step by step. It's something that I've said to somebody before when they're saying, well, why don't missionaries just come straight out of the gate when out the door and just talk about Elohim and his exaltation and all that kind of stuff? And the reasoning that comes around is that, well, you know, the concept is always you want to give line upon line, precept upon precept. You want to give them principles that they can build upon,
right?
Because you don't want to give them the calculus of Mormonism before you give them the addition and subtraction.
You got to slowly turn up the heat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's the idea that, you know, you don't really talk about temples too much. You don't really talk about any of that kind of stuff or the pressure that really exists to pay your tithing.
Right.
But, you know, it's all about this. This is the restored church, and this is the Church of Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ still has the 12 apostles, and he still speaks to us, and all of these things, and all of these other churches are of the great apostasy, and that's why we have so many different denominations, and this is probably why you've been so upset with so many different other churches. And so there's this really just sugarcoating of what Mormonism is going to be like. And then, you know, you get people to finally join the church, and once they join the church, that's when it's like, well, do you want to get the priesthood? Do you want to go to the temple? Well, if you want to get both those things, you got to be paying your tithing. And then you go, and then they're like, oh, General Conference is coming around, which is right around the corner, which, you know, Apology is going to be evangelizing to. And you get the apostles in the Quorum of the Twelve giving discussions about members of the church need to be more obedient to the principles and ordinances of the gospel. There's this family in a third world country that was having difficulty paying for their bills or their food or whatever the case may be, and, you know, yada yada yada, situation upon situation, this family stayed faithful and paid their tithing, and this miracle happened in their life, and this man got this job, and, you know, now he can pay his bills and all these things, and all these things are because he's a faithful member and pays his tithing. And so it's very much that back door of what was the term that you said? Planting a seed of faith, like the prosperity gospel.
Yeah, when you said that, I'm like, it's not like anyone has ever been on a TV, television with a white suit talking about planting seed.
I can promise you, I can absolutely promise you that we'll get people into baptism, uh-huh. right? And a lot of these times you're in areas of Florida that might be trailer park homes.
Right.
Right? And these people can't afford to pay 10%. I mean, if you're making, you know, if you're making the lower to average amount of like maybe $2,000 a month on one income or maybe $2,500, that's $250.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Each month.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what if you're trying to pay your car? What if you're behind on something? What if your car breaks down and you can't pay your tithing? As missionaries, you're supposed to go to their house and say, do you, and this, you guys are almost going to scoff at this, but like literally we're taught in situations like this, do you want to take care of your finances? Do you want to take care of your problems? Or do you want the Lord to take care of your problems? You should continue to pay your tithing, even if you are behind.
I mean, I need to minimize this.
Off at this is that as missionaries, we're told that when members are having issues paying their rent, paying their bills, paying for food, whatever the case may be, that we're specifically told to say something along the lines of, do you want to take care of your financial problems, or do you want the Lord to take care of your financial problems? And, you know, I don't want this. I do want to be honest and upfront. I don't want to just pose this as just horrifically awful like the prosperity gospels can be. But if you're a member of the church and you're paying your tithing, you have access to what's called the bishop's storehouse, which is where the bishop has literally the LDS Walmart, pretty much.
Mm.
It's a place where they store food,
right?
Food storage, rice in big cans. It's just easily very cheap. You know what I mean? There's a lot of times you just get a pass where it's just you go there with the bishop and you pick up food. And so there is humanitarian services that happen. You know what I mean? There's a time when I was after my mission, I'm married, I have my first kid, and things get expensive.
Yeah,
there was a time I had to go to the bishop and say, I'm having a hard time paying my power bill right now. And the church paid for it. You know what I mean? Because I'm a full tithe payer. But if I wasn't paying my tithing, then I don't get any assistance, really.
Right? Yeah, let me ask.
So, yeah.
So what's the importance then? If we were to see that converts are also less likely lifelong members to be married, that means they're not having children, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember when you were giving us like a preliminary lesson over these lessons, really. And you talked about an experience that you had actually had with one of, I forget what the term is, how there's an exchange between like the zone presidents, or who is it? And they switched, and then someone came in and gave a speech essentially to talk to you guys about like how the methods changed.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Because I think it's very important in regards to why missions are so important in the first place, and like switching the identity from the individual to someone who is actually a full life-giving body member to this organization. I think that's really sure. important.
So this will be a long one, by the way.
How long?
Less. So, addressing the concern that, the aspect of retaining members after baptism is what we were getting into. And just to go over this very shortly, there's a lot of gray area that comes around, the LDS Church and how it is administered. And so, for example, you have missionaries, you have senior missionaries, junior missionaries, you have district leaders, which are above five different companionships. You have a zone leader, which is above three to four different district leaders who are all in their respective areas. You have assistants to the presidents, which are above the zone leaders. All of these are 19 to 21-year-old boys. And then you have the mission president, which is about what you would expect the age of a bishop.
That's the guy I think I was talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so my very first mission president was very numbers hungry. And like I was telling you guys, the guns that were pulled on me, like literally this mission president would come in and say, we want you guys to go out and get 200 baptismal invites today. And literally what that is if I see you in Walmart and I say, hey, I'm an elder of the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints. We're preparing people to get baptized and accept the restored gospel. Are you interested in this lesson? And if you say, go kick rocks, I'm going home, and slam your door, I still get to tally my planner. There's one towards my 200.
Right.
And during those days, it didn't happen a lot, but there were some days where it's just like, we're getting in kind of a low fix. We're not producing the numbers. Let's get out there and get 200 baptismal invites. And so what do the assistants to the presidents, the zone leaders, and district leaders later say? Well, the most effective way to find people is to go where a lot of people are, go to the Walmart parking lot. And so, you know, there's this aspect of just produce numbers, because if you get 200 baptismal invites, you might get three people that want baptism.
Right.
And so it's just a trickle effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just, in my first, this first mission presidents are to be serving for 3 years. Missionaries are to be serving for 2 years. I was in the perfect time that my first mission president was going home right when I was at about a year and 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it was right around, I was going to spend a year with this guy, a year with the new guy.
Right.
And the first mission, I mean, I will go into detail about it a little bit later, but he's just throwing people in the water. Do you want to get baptized? Sure, great. Throw him in the water. He's getting baptized next week. and it's just very little preparation, very little, whatever the case may be. And there's a lot of situations where people got baptized where they shouldn't have been.
Right.
But the new mission president comes in, and we'll discuss this where, like, you know, President Nielsen comes in and what he says about the change. But really what happens is that I firmly believe that the higher-ups apostles understood what was going on in my mission and sent out a mission president that was very much different, that came in and said, we need to stop baptizing. Not necessarily, but he said, we need to start focusing on retention. And he would come in and say, what's the purpose of baptizing somebody if you're not going to see him in the celestial kingdom?
Right.
What's the purpose of baptizing someone if they're not going to prepare for the temple, if they're not going to do everything else necessary to see you up there? And so, you know, that's a sincere comment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, a very, very different change of, you know, methodology to reaching people and your evangelism and what you're doing out there. And so the change was massive. It disrupted a lot of things. A lot of missionaries, like, you know, we're just going over the purpose of a missionary. A lot of missionaries are feeling like, well, if I'm not baptizing or if I'm not focusing on that, am I not being successful anymore?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of that that goes into that. That's just a big, hairy, you know, problem that happens in the mission field, that too many people are focused on the numbers. Too many people are focused on the results. And, you know, there was a time where Elder Nielsen, who's now President Nielsen, Prophet Russell M. Nielsen, who's now a prophet now, while he was an apostle, he came and visited my mission during this change.
This is heavy right here.
And he came here to discuss why this change was happening, because the mission president, who was brand new, knew that there was a lot of depression going on, knew that there was a lot of missionaries that didn't really agree with his ways of going about things. So
yes, and we'll talk more about that in part two, about what was actually said, and it'll probably give a lot more light, because you talk about change. There's a lot of change that happened with you as you were on the end of being a sincere missionary, trying to do the Lord's work, but then you came in conflict with the machine aspect of it, getting the converts, getting baptisms, getting the tithe payers, all those sort of things, and you'll see these two worlds collide, and it's going to go along with what was said at that. And so stay tuned. We're going to leave you on a cliffhanger for part two. But join us next time.
Yes.
We see the other edge of the looking glass.
Yeah.
Next time on Cultish. So all that being said, go ahead. And if you enjoyed this first episode, we are just setting a foundation of going through the missionary lessons here. Go ahead and leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you thought. Also, there's a lot of work that goes into these episodes. So we had asked that if you are interested, if you're interested in partnering with us, you can go to our website at thecultishshow.com and go ahead and you can partner with us there at the donate tab. Also, there's a whole lot more we can expound upon, even upon this hour. So we are going to be also publishing blog content in regards to these episodes too. So if you check out our blog at thecultishshow.com, we'll be adding some additional content expounding upon what is discussed here in these episodes. So we will talk to you guys next time on part two. You're going to find out all the juicy details of what that was in part two of Cultists. We're entering into the kingdom of the cults. Talk to you guys soon.